Good morning, everybody. It is now November. The year has just flown by so quickly, too quickly for many of us because we had to learn so many new laws and trying to figure out Section 199A and everything and how it worked with our clients while the IRS was still issuing hundreds of pages of explanations. But here we are, it's November. And believe it or not, there is still time to do other things. Vladimir asked a question. Before we get to that, let's do our general introductions. And the deal is what you're going to do is each person is going to, I will unmute you. You'll tell us who you are, where in the world you are, because sometimes we have people from other countries dropping in. Probably not today. Where you are and what you want to get out of today, especially if you have a question. So, my name is Eva Rosenberg. I am the Tax Mama, and I'm here to learn from you and also to answer questions or provide resources as you need them on any topic whatsoever. And when we get done with the introductions, I will make a couple of announcements or say a couple of things that I'm excited about. So, Anne, do you have a microphone today? Hi, I have you unmuted. Incidentally, if you don't have a microphone, type your introduction and I will do it for you. Anne, not seeing anything. Anne is an EA and a CPA. She's in Texas, former IRS auditor. And these days, she's doing auditing and having a lot of interesting experiences in her life. Lots of new things going on and a new body, if I may say. Daniel, how about you? I have you unmuted. And we're very successful today because Daniel,
Can
you'll
you hear me
have to
now?
type your in. Oh, hang on, hang on. I just heard you. Hold on. Come on back. You just figured it out. Daniel,
All right.
let me. All right. I'm going to. I've. You came on just as I was muting you again. I'm going to unmute you.
All right, this time we
Look for
got
the
it
little
right.
pop-up.
All
Hey,
right.
hi there. How are you doing?
Hey,
Okay.
I'm Daniel. I run Ward Wilson with my wife Rhea, and I do insurance, risk management, and taxes, and I'm working on my EA certification through.
And where are you?
I am in Huntsville, Alabama.
All right. No storm problems there right now,
No, we got a
right?
cold snap, but no bad storms.
Okay, and are you going to have any questions?
I don't think I have any questions right now, so we're good. I'll just
Okay. All right.
if something comes up, I'll let you know, but for right now, I'm good.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Hang on. There we go. Okay. Info at SASA Accounting. I don't know who you are. It's so much better when you log in with your actual name. But who are you? Identify yourself. I recognize the email address as one of ours, but I don't know who it is. I've got you unmuted. If not, go ahead and type your intro and we'll get back to you. Okay, Vlad, how about you? I noticed you have a Russian keyboard from last night. Vlad, I'm hoping you're going to have a microphone since I built the questions around you. Hi, everyone. Okay, Vlad. Norbert. Hi, Norbert. Okay, I knew I recognized the email address. Vlad, please tell me that your microphone's working. I guess not. He's typing. Okay. So while Vlad is typing, let me tell you about some stuff. Tomorrow is Friday, right? Yes, tomorrow is Friday, and we have an IRS stakeholder liaison meeting here in the San Fernando Valley. And it's going to be a pretty good one. An interesting thing under this IRS administration, somehow or another, and I may have mentioned this before, we now have in place the most perfect IRS commissioner ever. Chuck Reddick, who is the IRS commissioner for the last year or so, is one of the first people that I can think of, certainly in my lifetime, who is both an IRS, both a tax attorney with a very long history defending clients, and has really great tax knowledge, and somebody who has been, the other thing is, he's been very innovative and the founder or the operator of the UCLA Tax Controversy Institute. He has been so instrumental in doing things for taxpayers when he was out on our side. Now he is the IRS commissioner, so now he's, gone to the enemy, but it's a good thing. And things are really changing inside the IRS. Some of the key people that I have known who were in operational positions that I have always been impressed with have suddenly been promoted up to key executive or managerial positions. And for instance, tomorrow at our IRS stakeholder liaison meeting. It's a meeting, it's a group that meets two or three times a year, used to be four, but budget cuts, with all of the tax organizations in the Southern California community. And so we meet, and Narina, who organizes it, brings us key speakers from the IRS, from different groups, to tell us about what the changes are, what their issues are, what their concerns are, and they listen to our concerns. Tomorrow, Derek Gantner, who has been in charge of stakeholder liaison for like the seven western states, including Hawaii, but not Alaska, he's been based out of here, out of Los Angeles. He has been promoted to the National Director of Stakeholder Liaison. See, I'm telling you, all of my best people are going up to the Washington level. So we have, don't tell anybody, we have a surprise cake for him. If I'd known about it before, and I just learned about it after I got back from Hawaii, if I'd known about it before, I might have arranged something funny, like have somebody do a broccoli souffle or something, and make that the cake. Some people aren't supposed to have sugar. So anyway, tomorrow is going to be very exciting, and they're actually having it here in the valley, so I don't have to drive all the way downtown. So that's the first good news. The other, as a result of attending the stakeholder liaison meetings, which I'm encouraging you to try to find a way to become a part of in your area, one of the people I got to know very well was Michael Schuller, or relatively well, who was the California taxpayer advocate. Michael has since retired. Anyway, somebody asked Tax Mama a question about 14, 15 months ago. She had filed several years' worth of tax returns very, very late. And all of those returns were filed more than 3 years too late. She was out of statute on the refunds, and she had about $90,000 worth of refunds coming to her. And I had to tell her, well, if you don't file within the 3 years, you lose. It's like you snooze, you lose. You don't get that money back. But then I started thinking. So I asked her some questions, in the IRS tax form, in the Tax Mama tax form. I asked her some questions, and I asked her if she had illnesses involved, if there were medical issues that prevented her from doing some of these things and getting these things done. And it turned out that she did. And so I decided to see if I can find a loophole in the law and see if I can try to get her money back, because that's a lot of money. I mean, $90,000 to lose. And then her story gets more and more pathetic. And so I agreed that I would help her out. I wouldn't charge her anything unless we actually got her money, but I would help her out. And I thought everything was good. Talked to Michael, and Michael, because we tried responding to the last letter denying her refund and got nowhere. So I called Michael, stakeholder liaison. I talked to Michael at the stakeholder liaison meeting and asked him to get the taxpayer advocate involved. I was able to send him the file. So after the IRS reopened after the government shut down in February, Michael got the file and he was able to get it into the hands of somebody in appeals, I don't know, somewhere in the country. And we started working the case. So that started finally getting it to somebody. It got into the hands of somebody in appeals who was willing to look at the case. About April or May of this year. And it took a while to get through the whole system and everything. By the way, along the way, I found out that she was married, the returns were filed jointly, and the big issue as well, why didn't your husband file? And that was kind of a stumbling block that we thought we wouldn't be able to get past, but we got past that. To make a long story short, just before I left for vacation, I spoke to the appeals officer, told her to get off her butt because she's been dragging this out. She has agreed for months that yes, she qualifies and that we got her everything the woman needed. So just before I left, I said, listen, the woman is literally starving. This is very useful money for her. Can you get it for her before Thanksgiving? And, more hemming and hawing. And I just kind of nicely and gently as I could lay down, the riot act. I gave her the riot act and said, you've got to do this now. My big fear was that she would get reassigned or something and it would never get done. I came back from vacation and there is a fax, which I asked for, summarizing her determination. Her determination is to approve all of the refunds to the tune of about $90,000. It's in processing now, and when you add the interest from 2011, 12, 13, 14, and so forth, this woman is going to get over $100,000. Maybe not by Thanksgiving, but certainly by Christmas. So it was, even Lulu didn't believe I could pull this off. But if you make a good enough argument and you present your case with citations and facts, and you kind of go through what the law actually requires and provide that documentation, you're going to be able to pull off miracles for your clients. So those are the two things that I wanted to tell you about, and I am just so excited. Norbert, who would be the international stakeholder liaison? Apologies if it's redundant. It's not redundant. It's okay. What you do is you go to Google, put in IRS stakeholder liaison. It will give you the list of the various liaisons. And let me see what I can find. IRS stake. Yeah, but you've got to put in the right letters. So if you start with O, you're not going to find the right one. IRS stakeholder liaison. They have a list of all of them. They don't necessarily, they give you the local contacts. They don't say these are the ones related to each of the different states. So they don't necessarily have someone who is specifically international, but the IRS Philadelphia campus tends to handle, and that would be the Pennsylvania area number two, that would tend to handle the international issues in general. And so that's the stakeholder liaison there probably would be the person to contact. And this is their phone number and their email address. So you can try using the email address to get hold of them. Good question. The course material, is filled with a lot of useful stuff for you guys, and I'm going to kind of defer to some of that to get into Vlad's question. So let's get into Vlad's question. He says, "What about marketing the tax practice? Do I know of any good marketing programs in this area?" He says, "I'm looking at the Roth Strategies program, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I never thought about tax resolution before. On the other hand, I saw multiple situations he's talking about. I used to run an REO foreclosure-oriented real estate brokerage in Seattle for around a decade or so. I'm seriously considering going in this direction now, but I want to explore alternatives before jumping in. I also looked into the Tax Coach Tax Master program. While it makes total sense to me, I tried doing tax coaching and tax planning in my certified financial planning practice in the past few years and found it hard to market. It seems tax planning is something a lot of people want to do but never get around to actually doing it. And that leaves the tax preparation practice itself. I feel I need to explore it before committing to the tax resolution program. I may be completely wrong." Well, all right. So he's brought up some good points. He's brought up some various things that he has already looked into, and we're going to talk about some of those things. But one thing I'm going to tell you is no matter what you choose, if you don't take active steps to do some form of marketing and let people know who you are and what you do, which means having microphones at work, but seriously, it means being prepared to let people know what it is you do. And in order to do that, what do you need to know? You need to know what your area of practice is. You don't want to have this massive amorphous practice where I do absolutely anything. Unless you want to build up a firm and each person in the firm has a different area of specialty, but it makes it harder to market whatever it is to the customer base. The more focused your area of your business, your area of practice is, the easier it is to reach your target audience. So, sorry, I'm drinking coffee. These are some of the areas that an enrolled agent can get into: tax preparation, representation, business taxes. I'm going to walk through all of this since I have the time. So these are some of the areas that you can get into. And Vlad also mentioned foreclosures and things like that. That's also another financial area that involves specialized tax expertise. What you've got to do if you look at things like that, foreclosures and bankruptcies and things like that, the people in trouble concept, is they're going to give you sob stories and don't, and I can't pay you. So you have to absolutely be able to insist on your fee in order to do the work. And that for some people, working with people in trouble is difficult and they don't have the heart to get paid what they're worth. So, look at your own personality, look at your own attitudes to determine what it is you're capable of in working with clients and in selling, because we're always selling. So let's look at some of the things that involve tax preparation. These are some of the different things that you can focus on as an area of specialty when it comes to tax preparation. Currently, one of the big issues is sales taxes nationally. You have about 50,000 sales tax jurisdictions around the country, and with the Wayfair case, especially Nexus, the businesses' business area, the area that they are directly or indirectly associated with, now comes into play for sales taxes. So this is now starting to affect businesses that are fairly small, and each state has their own rules. So let's say that you have a client that sells $500,000 worth of product. That's not what their profit is. That's their gross sales before their cost of goods sold. Well, they're going to be shipping to a number of different states or downloading things online. In their own state, sales taxes are fairly straightforward, but as they are shipping into other states, each state has rules based on the Wayfair decision that sales coming into their state of maybe $100,000 or more or $200,000 or more, whatever, now are going to they're going to want you to collect sales tax in that state. So literally, there are about 50,000 jurisdictions for sales tax around the country. Each state has multiple jurisdictions and multiple levels of jurisdictions. This could be a really good area to focus on if you can handle it. And for instance, I did not put the link, but Avalara has the software to work with this. And if you're working with higher end companies, CCH has some software that they have developed to deal with this and tie it to point of sale systems and things like that. So that is a really good area. Working with individuals, targeting individuals, let's put it this way. If somebody is price shopping, you don't want them. You don't want to target the earned income credit returns, the refundable refund clients. They can't afford you, and they are potentially going to cause you a lot of penalties because you have to spend so much time doing all of the documentation required for the checklist that you have to charge more than they're expecting. They want to pay 25, 50 bucks. You're going to need to charge a couple of hundred by the time you get done getting the proper documentation. So if you're going to work with individuals, you want to work with higher end individuals. Businesses, your best shot in tax preparation are businesses. They need a number of different things prepared on any kind of a monthly, quarterly, or annual basis. And there is so much that you can do with that and, set up like an annual fee and just split it up over the 12 months so that they don't feel like it's so painful. For instance, I have a guy who is converting our classes into the self-study version, into putting it into the other system and editing the audios and everything. And I couldn't get a bill from him. I couldn't get a bill. Just, month after month, I'm asking him for the bill. Finally, in January, I get the bill and I am pissed. Not because of the amount of the bill, although, getting a big bill like that at the beginning of the year, it doesn't feel great, but I could have used the deduction in 2018, and all of a sudden here it is in 2019. It would have saved me a lot of money to have gotten the bill. So that's another thing. People who are reluctant to bill are creating inconveniences for their clients. So this year we had a heart to heart, and I said, look, we know approximately what I'm going to pay you for the year. Why don't you just bill me every month? Billing every month is very appealing, guys. So these are some of the things. And any tax preparation that you do, as Michael pointed out last week, if you offer the audit protection program, it will substantially increase your fees. And yes, you're the one who will have to do the audit if they get audited, but if you do a really good job and you're selective about your clients, they are mostly not going to get audited. But your clients are going to feel better because the program includes getting paid for responding to the IRS notices. I don't know how many of you are actually charging your clients when you respond to the IRS notices. I know the large CPA firms, the ones that are very well organized and do time and billing and all of that, they track every 10 minutes or 15 minutes and bill. A lot of small firms don't bother with that. And so we just kind of bundle it into the fee, maybe raise it a little bit depending on how often they call. But setting up a formal audit protection program like Michael's talking about, and he has everything there so you don't have to recreate the wheel, means that your clients are going to see this, and if they want to opt out, now they are being alerted that if we don't participate in this audit protection program for a nominal amount of money, every time we get an IRS notice, we're going to pay you to take care of responding to it. And so, the clients that don't participate in the audit protection program, you now have higher fees you're going to get from them because a lot of them are going to be getting various CP2000 notices or other notices. So, one way or the other, that audit protection program will get them in or out. It's going to be interesting. So, Norbert's talking about the sales taxes. It also applies to the European Union because they have value-added taxes applying to external companies if they exceed a certain turnover, about 50,000 Swiss francs, or the company located outside the EU or Switzerland is responsible for reporting the VAT, not the client. If the import of an individual item is not taxable below a certain value. And if anyone is interested, he can explain. The value-added tax is kind of like our sales tax, except it gets added at various levels of production, assembly, and so forth. So it's something that happens all the way along the process from the creation of the product until it gets sold. A little bit more complicated. So, if anyone is dealing with shipping regularly outside the United States, you now have another tax you also have to deal with. Countries, states, provinces, they are all looking to collect money so they can survive. So, these are some of the tax preparation considerations or areas of practice. Tax representation, well, that it includes tax audits. And if you want to talk to Anne about getting work and getting client referrals, she's been working with taxaudit.com for a while, and they will contract with enrolled agents and attorneys and CPAs to send you clients who need audits. They'll pay you some kind of a flat fee. And they are affiliated, they're contracted with TurboTax. So, a lot of the clients you get are people who have paid for TurboTax's audit guarantee program. So, if you can't build your own audit practice, at least this will get you some experience. Obviously, collections, installment agreements, and offer and compromise, it's a great business. It's very lucrative. And if you look at some of the statistics that I have in some of the classes we've been teaching, there are a lot of people who are needing help with offers and compromise, with installment agreements, with getting liens and levies removed, and things like that. And so it is a very lucrative practice. However, as I mentioned before, these are people in trouble. They have sob stories. Some of them are responsible for getting themselves in trouble. Others are not. Others are victims of circumstances. In any case, they always have a sob story. And they can't afford to pay you because, after all, they're not paying the IRS and they're not afraid to not pay you. Think about that. If they're not afraid not to pay the IRS, how frightened are they of you? And you can't really sue them because they already have IRS liens and levies and bad credit. So even if you were to sue them, you wouldn't be able to collect. So if you work with these people, you have to have the backbone to insist on getting paid up front and to insist on getting paid as you go along. If you don't have that kind of strength, do not get into this area. If you do have that kind of strength, it's very lucrative. And I guarantee you that in the beginning, when people really need you, they will move heaven and earth to find the money to pay you. After you have solved the problem, you may have heard me say this, even though they're supremely grateful, very happy, love you and everything, they're not going to pay you because, well, first of all, it's not urgent anymore. The problem is solved. Secondly, if you didn't take care of it because of their own failings, their own lies, or whatever, and they didn't get the deal they wanted, they hate you. And not only are they not going to pay you, they're going to go out on social media and slam you everywhere they can. So if you're going to get into this area, then, and you want to know how to market and get clients, you definitely want to work with Michael Rosbrook's program because he has put together everything you need to know about how to attract those clients, how to get those referrals. He's given you the letters, the forms. He'll tell you everything you need to do to be able to get those clients. So if that's what you want to do, definitely work with Michael Rosbrook. The other thing is taking on appeals cases to correct somebody else's problems. A lot of taxpayers try to do their own cases or work with tax professionals who don't have a clue, and so it's all messed up. And again, market over there. General troubleshooting. If you get to know tax firms in your area, not everybody, especially the older firms, not everybody deals with any kind of IRS notices, representation, or anything. You may want to contact them. You may want to write to them or speak to them or meet them at their meetings, do a presentation at a CPA meeting or something, talking about how to, tips about how to handle the notices. The CPAs will come to you and talk to you about taking over that part of their practice so they don't have to do that because the liability for not responding properly and not handling it properly could be substantial. So that is a way to get those kinds of cases without having to really spend a lot of money on marketing, is go to the various CPA meetings, go to chambers of commerce to talk to the public in general, business people who are always getting into kinds of trouble, and you'll be able to get those. So Norbert wants to know about certified acceptance agent. This affects you, Norbert. You're outside of the country. So, certified acceptance agent, the IRS issues ITINs, taxpayer ID numbers for people who can't get Social Security numbers. They issue ITINs and alien tax ID numbers. In order to get one of those, a lot of original identity documentation needs to be provided. If the taxpayer files their ITIN application themselves, what is that, a W-7? If they file it themselves, they have to either go to an IRS office in person, and there aren't very many overseas, right? Or they have to mail their original documents to the IRS. And you know what a black hole that is? It disappears inside the IRS. You may never get it back, and those are irreplaceable documents. citizenship papers, identity papers, amnesty things, whatever. These are critical documents they may never get back. In addition, the PATH Act of 2015 mandated that ITINs need to be renewed every 3 years. So we've now gone through the first 3-year process. So now every ITIN in the country, every person with an ITIN has to renew it. Now they have to do it every 3 years. They have to either, and to maintain it, they have to file a tax return every year, or they have, and they also have to go through the renewal process. So that means that it's not just new people who need to get the ITIN applications filed. It's every ITIN holder in the world. And the Certified Acceptance Agent program is basically free to apply for. The only thing you have to spend money on is to take a forensic course. It's about a $200 course, and pass that forensics course so that you can identify forged documents. Once you get approved by the IRS as a certified acceptance agent, and you don't have to be an EA or a CPA or anything, you just have to take their video, their online, they have an online class which is free. You have to go through that. Once you get accepted, you will be able to look at the documents, copy the documents, certify that they are not forgeries and that they are real, and you will be able to send the copies to the IRS. You certify that you have seen them. The clients don't have to relinquish their originals and potentially lose them in the IRS black hole. They have an acceptance agent version also, but you're not certified and you'd still have to send in the documents. This is especially important when you live overseas because you get the clients coming to you for free. You get listed on the IRS Certified Acceptance Agent website. So wherever you are in the world, they have a web page for that country listing all of the contacts for those acceptance agents. If you're in the United States, they list it by state, so you can find them by state. So it's free advertising once you get to be a certified acceptance agent. The one thing you need to know about that is make sure that you let the IRS know on the application that you're going to file at least 200 ITIN applications, otherwise they may not accept you. So this is something that's good. Vlad, I noticed last night that you have a Russian keyboard, which means you are dealing with foreigners. You have a built-in audience for the certified acceptance agent. There is no specific fee or limitation that you can charge. I try to recommend that you do a bundle for the entire family because if one person needs to renew, the IRS lets the entire family renew. So, this is also, in addition to anything else you're doing, this is also a great area of practice because some of your business people may need to have an ITIN to operate in some of their businesses. So this is, in fact, a great idea. If you don't know how to do representation, the material that I have in part three of our class has a lot of information for you. But to get better and better, NAEA has the National Tax Practice Institute, and you can learn more about that. There are three tracks, but really a lot of the more hands-on information, and they have many events throughout the year and webinars about representation is Larry Lawler's ASTPS boot camps, where you're going to get some of the same top level instructors as at NTPI, but better ones as well. So you're going to get people who are actually practicing and doing representation all of the time at these ASTPS boot camps. My tax practice series is not, the one I do at CCH, is not nearly as good as either of these two, I guarantee you. And about half of it may already be in the part three. comes to business taxes, I'm not going to go through all of this, but in the business taxes, here are different things that you can do. You can become an external controller for small businesses. They can't afford to pay somebody $10,000 or $15,000 a month to be an in-house controller. Maybe they can afford to pay you $2,000 a month or $1,000 a month to take over some of those functions and then maybe get a bonus at the end of the year. Vlad was saying, I tried doing business coaching and so forth and high level consulting and stuff, and it's hard to get people. Well, I'm doing some interviews this week for the update in my Small Business Taxes Made Easy book that I have to finish writing by the end of the month. And one of the things that I learned about is a company called Vistage.com. And they have these peer group consultation things where they put together groups of about a dozen people who are business executives, each in different areas. It's not one of those leads groups where you have to give each other leads and that kind of garbage. This is, honest to goodness business peer groups, and each one of them has different level of expertise, and there is a coach that participates with the group from Vistage that oversees it and organizes the group. And the person I was talking to started out working with these folks. You pay about $1,000 a month to participate in this. And Vlad, the link that I gave you is the link to become a coach. So it's the link to become a coach. There are qualifications. You do have to have expertise in multi-million dollar businesses. So, it's not just somebody walking in off the street saying, "Hey, I know I have good business ideas." But this is the link to become a coach. And you participate in something like this, you're going to get paid as the coach, and you're also going to meet a lot of great people. The person I was talking to started out with them for several years, and then her coach formed another group outside of that that is still meeting. So that is actually, and that group is, they're not paying each other anything, but they are actively helping each other, and there are requirements for this peer group, this mastermind group, and obligations. They have obligations to each other. They make commitments. You've given me advice. Here's my commitment. I'm going to get this done before the next meeting, kind of thing. And if you're going to be doing taxes, business taxes, that audit protection program that Michael was talking about works for business taxes. Whatever it is you want it to work for, you price it accordingly. Estate and gift planning. This is kind of a yes and no thing. When we have an estate exclusion of $11.4 million per person, you would think you don't really need that much estate planning. But the fact is, you do. And there are a lot of people with much smaller estates, a million, 100,000, whatever, that do really stupid things about transferring mom's house before she dies. So instead of getting the step-up basis at date of death, it's going to be worth the 30,000 she paid for it 40 years ago. There is a lot that you can do, and Lynn Freer at Caltax at Spiedel has some courses that you can take to learn more about that area. So, estate and gift, you're dealing with people kind of upbeat, positive money, and so forth. And a lot of people, if you look at some of the questions in this week's Tax Mama forums, we're getting a lot of questions from people who misunderstand how estates and gifts work. Employee benefits is a really good area. And so, if you have the securities licenses and the insurance licenses, this is great. You're a certified financial planner. You probably got the series licenses and things. Being able to help companies set up retirement programs, insurance programs, you're able to not just get paid for setting these things up, you're going to get the commissions for the fees for all of those other things. And you're giving clients things that make people happy, that make them, their employees happy. The employees will stay with them longer. So this is a hugely lucrative area. And not enough people know how to do these various things properly. So, Vlad, this can also be a consideration because you have certain licenses. And now we also have the problem where people have employees who have been paying their own expenses and can't deduct them. And if you go into the board, I didn't put the link in over here, but if you go into the board, you have the link to the second Trump tax class, and that's all about how to convert employees who have been paying their own expenses into accountable plan systems where, let's say, they normally pay $50,000 out of pocket, they reduce their wages or their commissions by about $50,000 and submit expense reports to the company instead on an accountable plan. And so they're still making the same money, more or less spending the same money, but now they get the deductions off the top. They're not paying tax on that income in the first place, and they're not itemizing. So I run some numbers for you and I give you a little template on how to do that. So this companies need to change. As long as the law is staying this way, and it's going to be till 2025, this is critical for employees who can't take any of their deductions. The high-end tax planning and consulting. Well, Vlad looked at the certified tax codes training and it all looks really interesting. But where do I get the clients? Well, first of all, these are some of the kinds of things that you're going to deal with. Going through the certified tax coach training, Dominique gives you the tools on how to do the planning and everything. And her general philosophy is what you do is develop the tax plan. You don't actually have to implement it. She has people who you can contract with to implement the plan and get paid part of their fee. But the concept is you put the plan together, and if you're going to save somebody $1 million, you get, say, 20% of what you're going to save them. But back to Vlad's question, where do you get the clients? First of all, you start with your own client base. If you already have clients, look at your clients and see who needs to do tax planning to save money, not just now, but in the long run. For instance, I have a client who's going to get about $70 million in the next few years. I need to be able to do some serious tax planning with him, and we've been working on that. So, not just what do we do for this year, but what are we going to do in the long run? And ask your clients about long-term plans. When you're doing the tax return for your clients, we're not allowed to send them stuff without their permission, okay? Federal laws, IRS laws, all kinds of crap. However, when we are sitting with them, we can have them schedule an appointment to do the tax plan. We're not allowed to mail them stuff or email them stuff, but we can get their approval to communicate with them about tax planning. So you don't need a lot of clients. You need two or three key clients to get started with. And once you're successful with them and put something together for them, they're going to tell everybody they know. So that's another great place to go. These are more things that you might want to look into as far as areas of practice. All right. Once you know what you want to do, how do you get the people? Well, I've given you some ideas on how to get the people, but I don't know if you have taken a look at this class, Vlad. This is all about how to make a living. There is like 2.5 hours worth of information, but it's going to boil down to this, okay? First, decide on who your client base is, who your target market is. Now, how do you meet those people? Go meet those people. Get involved in the organizations that those people are involved in. Do volunteer work in those areas. You want to meet people who have a certain amount of money. Are they involved with children's organizations, blind organizations, movie organizations? They don't have to be depressing organizations to do volunteer work in. They can be happy organizations. But if you do volunteer work for the kinds of organizations that the kinds of people who have the level of income or the particular practice area, the particular professional or business area you want to reach, you're going to meet those people. You're going to talk to them. You're not going to push. You're just going to, chat with them, and they're going to bring stuff up, complaints about something. Yeah, I know how to solve that. Do presentations to various organizations. You can even do them free, give handouts. One of the ways I started my tax practice originally was I would do these little seminar things for a couple of hours. I rented a hotel conference room for $50 at the time. And for $10, this was a long time ago, $10 a person, I taught people how to do your own tax return. Well, half of the people at every one of those presentations came and hired me. So that was the beginning. The other thing is, I found local newspapers. They didn't pay me, but the local newspapers love to get articles. Your Chamber of Commerce, write an article about something relevant to the kind of client you want to attract. Don't write articles in general. Focus on topics that you want to work with. You don't want to give them general updates. Focus on whatever issue it is you want to attract clients in. Get quoted as an expert. There is, and you may not get paid for those articles, but you'll be established as an expert in your community. Seriously, try to do this locally, and if you have a language, do it in your language. How many other professionals are talking to them in their own language? I used to write articles and have one of my first graduates from UCLA, the UCLA class, translate my articles and my newsletters into Chinese and Vietnamese for his audience. Putting things into people's audiences, critical, critical. There is also a free service called helpareporter.com, HARO. If you sign up for that as an expert, you will get emails from journalists and writers and bloggers all over the country, maybe all over the world. And if you send them a response, they'll tell you what they need. If you send them a response and follow the rules for HARO, you may get quoted in their articles. They may take what you write to them verbatim and quote you if you tell them how you want to be attributed, or they may call you for a more in-depth interview. It's free. The other thing you want to do is join organizations where your potential clients are. Are they foodies? Do they go to high-end, tasting things? Are they involved with equestrian issues? Are they bowlers? Are they beauty pageanters? Whatever it is you want to be, whatever kind of client you want to reach, join the organizations where they are. And it never hurts also to go to other tax professional organizations and do presentations and become their expert. You get called upon, you may get paid for your presentations, but they're going to come to you if you are covering an area that they're not doing very well. Let's face it, we are all afraid we're going to be wrong. Every one of us has the fear when we're working in areas that are slightly different. Even some of the stuff we do every day, the laws are changing. If we could call somebody who really is an expert in that area, I will get that person in as a consultant, pay them to finish working or to review my work before it goes out. So I don't look at tax pros as competitors, other tax pros, they are all potential resources for me. Behave that way in your professional life. That's gonna make you a resource for other people. Let's see, what else do we have over here? You attract higher paying clients? You're gonna love this one. Just do the things you really like. Discover your passion. If you don't already know your passion, find your passion. You're too busy working to have a passion. Pull back and start getting into the stuff you haven't done in a long time, the things you really love to do. If you love to do something, you're going to meet other people who love to do that too. They will listen to you, they will talk to you, they will confide in you. Do not denigrate their existing tax professional. Do not put down their existing tax professional, even if that person is doing amazingly incompetent things. You might say, you know, I have some ideas. Would it be okay? Would you be willing to hire me to work with your tax professional and team up to help you do something? So don't put them down and say, hey, the guy's an idiot or he's doing something illegal. You're not going to get happy clients that way. And I will warn you, somebody who is complaining about their tax professional, it may be their own fault. They have not called their tax pro and they're sitting there wondering why their tax pro isn't giving them advice. So bear that in mind. And people who are always complaining about somebody or really mad at their professionals, avoid those clients. You don't want them as clients. You can't do anything right in the long run. They with social media these days, it's the age of the customer. They're going to really slam you, even though you've done everything for them, but all they do is complain and they don't take responsibility for their own behavior. So be very selective about the clients you take on. You don't need to accept everyone. There are people that you will say, no, I am not the right person. It's not necessarily my area. Maybe, you know, here's a list. You can find EAs and CPAs, you know, and these references. I'm not it. Or maybe you know somebody you can refer them to, especially if there's somebody you really hate, refer them to that person. And that person will become feel complimented, but you know that you've sent them somebody horrible. On the other hand, people have different personalities. And that horrible person with that you're running into may actually be able to work very well with some other jerk. Two jerks together sometimes actually work. You know, it's you know, different personality management. So the other thing is about people who don't look wealthy. A lot of people are quietly successful and rich. They don't dress it, they're not ostentatious, they're not driving Rolls Royces. They might even be able to afford them, but they don't care. So just treat everybody really, really well. And when it comes to seniors, it's the funniest thing I started learning when I was starting my practice. I met this one couple and they were retired. He was an engineer, she was a school teacher. They were retired, lived in a nice, modest tract house and everything. And ever since they got married, she started squirreling away money into US bonds and into shares of various stocks, little by little. And she kept a really detailed loose leaf notebook with all of the transactions. So she's the only person I've ever seen who actually had great detail, nice pencil and everything, all very clear. I sat down one day after doing their tax return. I said, "Do you know what you're worth?" "No." So we added up approximately the value of their stocks, their bonds, and the house, and they were worth over $2 million. They had no idea. They had no idea. And they had a stream of income coming in from retirement, from pension, and Social Security that they could afford to live on. They didn't have a mortgage anymore. It just opened their eyes about, yes, we can afford to go travel and do things we never did before. It didn't dawn on them. So that's the other thing is you can help people realize how wealthy they are and that they do need to do some estate planning so that these things get transferred over to other people. Listen to your clients. You probably have a client base already that you can do more things for and get paid a lot more money. And the other thing is dump your 10% worst clients every year, the ones that make you miserable. Dump them every year. You don't need them in your life. That will, the income that you're throwing away, it will free you up to get better clients who will pay you more. Yes, and financial planning is a terrific related field with tax preparation. People who need financial planning have money. And if you look at some of the questions people ask in the Tax Mama Forum, it will blow you away. These people have so much money and they're coming to a free forum to ask tax questions. Why in the heck are they coming to this free place when they really need to be sitting down with a tax professional? And you can take some of that stuff with my permission, so ask me first, and use some of those questions and situations as an example in your presentations. Because some of those questions blow me away as to why they're coming after the fact, after they've done something, and I can't fix that now. If they and you can use those as examples. You don't necessarily, use the people's names or whatever, but this is what this person did. If they had come first, look what could have been done for those people. So these are real situations, but ask me before you do that. So that's all I have for today, because I didn't really have a lot of time to do planning on some of the other current things that I have going, but I'll try to do a newsletter on Monday morning. So you've got the handout over here with these notes. And does anyone have any questions, notes, feedback, ideas that you want to cover today? Or did this give you enough help to get you started? I have to say, I've always found it easy to attract business, to attract clients. Lulu and I were talking yesterday. She has contact client's daughter or something who has learned American Sign Language. So she has the skill and she can't find work. And I'm just sitting there. Why can't she find work? If you know American Sign Language, what would you do if you were trying to find work? Told her, oh, thank you, Eric. I told her, look, there are visitors and convention bureaus in every town in every major area. If she were to go to the visitors and convention bureau, they can turn her on to the organizers for every different event at every major hotel and convention center in that geographic area. Many of those are now looking for people who can stand behind the speaker and do the American Sign Language translation. She can get endless amount of work by contacting visitors and convention bureaus. So the point I'm trying to make is keep your mind open, keep your mind open to the possibilities. Find out about various industries. There are so many things. And by the way, visitors and convention bureaus, they also are associated with organizations that help find speakers, not just for the event, but for the spousal events. Every time you have a big conference, like a medical conference, somebody is organizing additional presentations for the spouses who attend. Years ago, also towards the beginning of my career, I hooked up with somebody through the Anaheim Visitors and Convention Bureau, and this company put together the spousal program. So I started doing financial presentations to the doctor's spouses. Again, another source where you can find clients. All kinds of stuff. So now, as Norbert says, you need to get started. So gathering a lot of information is good, but then you need to take the next step. So remember, December 12th, we are going to do a 3-hour tax update with CPE. So there'll be 3 hours of CPE for EAs for the people who need the 3 hours of federal tax updates for their AFSP and also for CPAs. That's it, guys. If nobody else has anything, then I am going to bug out for today and get back to work on the book because I have to turn that in by December 2nd, by Monday after Thanksgiving. And I will see you guys on the 21st for the next EA class update. I will try to get this posted now and then have the audio posted by tomorrow. Okay, guys. Thanks for the question. That's a good question.